Welcome to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims here live on WWGH 107.1 FM radio. We stream live on the web www.wwgh1071.com. We also have, for your convenience, downloading of a free app called TuneIn on any electronic device and search WWGH. That way you can take advantage of the many talk show programs that we have to offer you. While I am on the air from now until top of the hour, 5 p.m., if you have any questions or would like to make any comments in regards to this airing of this show, please call 740-383-9944. Again, that number is 740-383-9944. Let me share with you those who faithfully support A Voice of a People, starting with Chappie's Hydraulic Hose Specialist, LLC, 1325 North Main Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-382-8552. Logos Christian Ministries, Pastor Jackie Peterson, 582 Lee Street, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number there, 740-223-1515 or www.logoschristianministries.com. Last but not least, Inspect Ohio, LLC, your one-call home inspection company with 25 years of experience working for you. They are located in LaRue, Ohio, and that number is 740-262-0939. And these supporters have been with me since day one, so we have a friendship or relationship almost in the making of 6 years in 2020. So thank you for those whose names I mentioned that support A Voice of a People, and those of you who I don't know about that listen faithfully to the show. Thank you. I'd like to start my show off with a thought for today. And the title of this is called The Fragrance of Positive Thought. Some people say that it is very difficult to be positive in this highly negative world, but just as an increase stick spreads fragrance everywhere. Okay, I get it now. And dispels bad odor, the power of constantly pure and positive thoughts can transform the negative attitudes and atmosphere to any person or place. It took me a minute to get that thought. But yeah, you get a perfume stick mm-hmm. and spread it around the room, it does mm-hmm. change the atmosphere, right? And the smell.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully it's a positive one.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. My guest today is Whitney Gurman. She has been here several times before. I did not get her title, and I'm so sorry for that. But she is affiliated with the Master Urban Farmer, mm-hmm. which she's here to talk about today. Also, Community Voices. You mm-hmm. still affiliated with them?
Yep, we're still doing Community Voices.
And Poverty?
Poverty, all of it. I mean, all I'm here it. For the community.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
She's here for the community. Let me introduce to you now Whitney Gurman.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. So, my title is I'm a community educator for okay. Ohio State University Extension. A lot of people affiliate extension with 4-H, that's signature program, and we're in all 88 counties.
Okay.
But I do work around community development and health and wellness. So I'm offering this Master Urban Farmer class that I'm here to talk about today.
Okay, great. I'm excited about it. It is a new year, a new decade, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know we had talked about this last time you were here about the community garden. That can help people who are, well, teach us new things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. So tell us where you are right now with that.
Oh, man. I feel like I've really taken this journey in the last year to just understand Marion County in a new way and reach new audiences that mm-hmm. our organization hasn't reached before. And so this idea of urban farming didn't start with me. There's been many counties and states across the country that have explored urban farming as a means to better access to healthy food, which we've talked about before in the show.
Right.
There's really some disturbing stats about the number of people in Marion that lack access to healthy food. And typically when we report on these kind of like public health stats, we're really talking about the general public. But, you know, in the work that I've done, I'm always promoting an anti-racist agenda.
Yes, you are.
So I'm really looking at, well, what does this mean specifically for the Black community?
Mm-hmm.
How might the Black community experience this problem differently? And I found out that 71% of Black children in Marion County experience poverty. And that's compared to 22% of white children.
Wow.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even think that.
I was so shocked. I went back through it and I looked and I tried to figure out, like, that is such a high number.
Hmm.
I mean, it's a high number for white children, too. 22% is a really high number for white children. But just that drastic difference between Black and white children is really concerning to me, especially when we know that so much of our farming practices come from African wisdom.
Okay.
Composting is like a really popular thing right now. And in my circles, it's like a lot of people associate composting with white hipsters. but it started like way long time ago.
And what is that?
It's a way to like reduce food waste and mix it into the soil. And I think because of climate change and sustainability efforts, people have shown more interest in it. But it actually, the earliest composting was in Egypt. And so I just find that fascinating that, you know, we're pulling a lot of this wisdom from African civilizations prior to colonization.
Whoa.
Yeah. And kind of exploring, like, what does that mean here? And what would a practice of urban farming led by Black communities look like?
Right.
So exploring those questions and then thinking, how do we, like, build programming around this? And the work that Maize Temple has already started was really a good launching point on how can we just surround the church and other churches that might be interested in right. support they need for gardens.
I was trying to get my daughter here, but she was tied up with something else today. I didn't even let her know you were coming until earlier today, and I thought I better call her because she was so interested in that, because I think you remember her talking about her church. Her and someone in her church had thought about having a community garden. I'm just really blown away by that, that idea, concept came from Blacks.
Absolutely.
Black people in Egypt. Wow, how old is that concept?
I think it was Cleopatra.
Really?
Era. Yeah. I mean, this is like very old, ancient wisdom. And obviously because of colonization and the slave trade, there has just been ongoing onslaught of taking away culture and replacing it with white supremacist ideologies of this is how we do things.
Mm-hmm.
Or extracting those ideas and claiming they were ours to begin with, which we know isn't true. And I think the sad part is, you know, for me, I'm working at through cooperative extension. And so we work closely with the USDA. And there's been discriminatory practices within these programs as well. In 1920, about 14% of all the growers were African-American farmers. And now it's less than 2%. And in Marion County, 96% of the farm producers are white.
Yeah, because I think we went through a stage that we are overcomers now.
Right.
We've overcome all the oppression. I mean, it's in our mind that we're in a different state.
Mm-hmm.
In our minds and working and housing and It's like, we've overcome. We finally are participants of Martin Luther King's dream.
Yeah.
And we kind of gotten rid of the thought that we really need to farm. My mother canned every year. Mm-hmm. I was just talking about this. Boxes and boxes of canned tomatoes. They had gardens. They used to walk to them sometimes up on Grant Street. My uncle had like three lots up there, and he used like two to live on. Well, four lots. Two to live on. The other two lots were gardens. And he would section them off and let others have a piece here, a piece there. Mm-hmm. And we've lost that concept. Either we have grown up and become lazier than our parents. You know, because it's work. It's hard work.
Yeah. And that is kind of my target audience for this is younger people. Because I think it's like the average white farmer is 58 years old. The average black farmer is 63. So what happens when they're gone? What traditions do we still have?
They'll be gone.
Right.
And not just that. There are a lot more that we need to try to hand down to some of our younger, our youth of today, down to the third and fourth generation, because my children don't do as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because things have changed.
Mm-hmm. Technology.
Technology. Mm-hmm. Look now, you don't even have to really go to the grocery store. You can just order on your phone. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So things are changing really fast.
Yeah, that widening gap between knowing where our food comes from. Like you said, I order my groceries online, and my daughter's five, and we garden in the summer, but we're not extensive gardeners. And I would be curious to know where she thinks her food comes from, because she waits for the quote-unquote store helper to come.
Yeah, order pizza. So, I mean, it's so convenient.
Yep.
And when you think about it, a lot of people talk about, well, one day we're going to be bombed and this and that. But what if that happens?
Mm-hmm.
And our food becomes contaminated.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that the whole world is going to be destroyed because a bomb falls here or there. But where would that leave us?
Absolutely. I mean, look at climate change. You know, we have to find means to survive. And when we see natural disasters like Hurricane Katrina, and you look at pictures, and who are the people that are on the roof waiting for the helicopters to come?
Right.
And I guess that's my why am I doing this work? Is because the struggle for equal access, equal opportunity is important to me.
Yes. It should be to all of us.
Mm-hmm.
It should be to all of us because we need one another, whether we believe it or not or see the need for it. But we need one another.
Yep.
Because we don't know when why wait till a catastrophe happens to help your neighbor or care about whether they have food to eat or even clothes to put on or shoes on their feet. Yep. You know, they say there are so many kids that didn't even have shoes. I'm trying to wrap my mind around it. Are you kidding?
Yeah, it's so hard to imagine. And I think that theme of that we're all connected and we need one another is really great reminder. We just finished Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Mm-hmm.
In February, we're going into Black History Month. And that's the theme, right, is unity.
Unity. True. And, you know, it should always be. It just should always
year
be.
Year round, really.
Yes, yes. It should be no-brainer, like I said. That's a no-brainer, right? We need one another. So, what kind of response are you receiving from this?
I think there's a lot of positivity. I mean, so last summer, just to give some framework, Mays Community Temple partnered with Ohio State and Ohio State Extension and City Ward Representative Jason Schauber to start a garden. And we had, last May, a community planting day. Where we came out, we laid seeds and starter plants, and Jason had done an incredible job with preparing the ground. Just amazing things that we wouldn't have been able to do in the short amount of time that he was able to accomplish it, because he's also a farmer, and so he had access to the equipment.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And at Ohio State, we have access to grants, so we could get the starter seeds. and the plants and the small tools. And then the church had access to people that could come and volunteer.
That's
and
true.
Plant. And they had space where we had a meal. And it wasn't like, it ended up raining that day, but it was actually like so beautiful because then it cleared and we were all out in the garden and the sun was shining at the end. And it actually happened to be the same day that my nieces were born, my two twin girls. And so it just became like such a nice like theme of, like you said, unity and rebirth and renewal. The land was previously owned by the land bank. And so it was, there was an old vacant blighted home that mm-hmm. was torn down.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I just love that theme of healing and repairing and recovering and making something out of what was once seen as an eyesore.
That's true. That's true. And we have so many blighted homes still yet to come down. And it just makes us wonder, where are we all going? What's happening to our world, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think even with your quote starting today of like seeing the positivity that we can see these blighted homes as just an eyesore and something that we just need to fine people for or arrest people for, or we can see this as an opportunity to come together and create new things, create urban farms, create art and cultural spaces. And I'm so passionate about the urban farm because I come from the land-grant university. You know, mm-hmm. that's what the founding of Ohio State was built on, agriculture.
Okay.
So we partnered with them in the first season. There were around 100 families that were fed from the garden that we know of.
Okay.
I mean, it was open to the community, so anyone could come and pick. And I've heard stories of people coming and enjoying the produce. And we had a lot of wonderful donations. The YMCA donated picnic tables and a water tank. Like I said, Jason was a huge help to us. And OSU, Marion as well. And so it was a really good success. And what we're looking forward to this next year is for a lot of folks in the congregation, it was their first time being involved in this kind of project.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback we got is, we need to learn more how to do this.
Yes. I agree.
And there's some people in the community that, you know, they have stories, they're elders, they have practices that we want to share and pass down. But then there's some of us that are like, I just need to know how to keep the pest away from the garden, or how do I test the soil? Especially if you're using a lot that was owned by the land bank, or there was a home that used to be on that, you want to test the soil to make sure there's nothing, no lead or mm-hmm. any kind of contaminants before getting started. And that's something our office can help with, is doing that testing.
Oh, that's great. That's good to know.
Yeah. So each week we'll have a topic. This will start on March 19th at Mays Temple from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And the first session is really just an introduction on what is urban farming. We'll be working through a curriculum that was developed out of Columbus, but there's also a really great book that I recommend called Farming While Black, and it's based on a story from Soulfire Farm. And so we'll kind of pull in some of their advice as well, that's unique to farming in the city. And then we'll go over those, you know, those questions that you might put in your Google search engine, but really just want an expert on the pest management, how to produce the right kind of fruits and vegetables and where to plot them. And we'll even talk about hydroponics and, you know, aquaponics, which is with fish. And each week we'll have a new speaker that is an expert and can answer questions and provide support.
That's good. That's really good. I remember growing up on the east side of town, which was considered the poor side of town. We didn't know the difference, you know, growing up. But it seems like every house had either a cherry tree, apple tree, mm-hmm. pear tree, plum tree, apricot tree. It was just full of fruit. And most of the time we would eat outside from the trees.
Yeah, that is so beautiful.
You know,
yeah.
Or somebody would have a strawberry patch that we shouldn't have been in. You know, when your kids are not playing, you know, And she used to have them tin pans, and if you would trip on that.
Oh, well, then you do string, yeah. Pest management, week two, Sims.
That was so fun, though. You just love it. But even in my home, I was talking to you about my aunt and my uncle that had the land. They had two grapevines. They had three mulberry trees. Wow. A huge pear tree. So you're out there eating, you know, all day, all morning, those real black grapes, too. And they'd be so sweet, you know. You get a cluster of them, and that would do you, you know. But you don't see too many of those around anymore in the neighborhoods. Yeah. You know, those they've probably been cut down from when I was growing up as a child, where they weren't taken care of. And maybe people didn't even know how to take care of them, you know. And I think my mother had the most delicious apple tree in her front yard. Oh my gosh. We couldn't even wait till they got full size. We'd be already in that tree, right? Yeah. But it just reminds me of how simple life can be or used to be.
Yeah. You absolutely. Know?
So you weren't walking around with all this extra weight because you were eating fruit off the land. Mm-hmm. You weren't walking around hungry all day, you know. So that's some of the good points about having a community garden.
Yeah, and all of us, you know, most of us have, you know, we eat food, we live on the land, and we have these shared memories around that. And so citing your example of your family, and I think my family is from North Carolina, and my uncle is still alive. He is in his 90s. Okay. But he had a particular way of farming, and he really viewed his food as medicine.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that great? Medicine. I'll bet we need that, right?
Progressive. Like, yes. You know, he's been doing this for 90 years, and without knowing it, he's probably pointed to the science the whole time is we are what we eat.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I was thinking when you're talking about gardening, producing your own food, your own lettuce and beans or whatever, your own celery, carrots, you know, because they seem to have recalls on lettuce a lot, mm-hmm. or tomatoes. Would that lower the risk of that happening if we produce our own, like in a community garden or something, which I have no idea where this other stuff is coming from. Do you?
Yeah, I mean, it could be from a lot of different things. I mean, definitely not having that middleman, a factory that's producing these kinds of things could help. And it's something we don't talk a lot about. You know, a lot of us are attracted to the media attention around violence, which mm-hmm. is understandable.
True.
But we're five times more likely to be harmed by diet-related conditions.
That's true.
And so really focusing on our health and well-being based on the food we get, and growing our own food is just, I think about it as our means of survival. Having those skills, because if something would happen, like you mentioned, doomsday or climate change, or if we're in a vulnerable position,
true,
growing our own can help us through those times. And a lot of people don't realize that if you receive SNAP benefits, you can purchase seeds.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's definitely more affordable than fresh produce, especially at this time of year.
Yes.
Urban farming doesn't have to be as big as a lot as we have at Mays Community Temple.
Mm-hmm.
You can grow something really easily in a container, a pot.
Or a bucket. I've even seen people do tomato plants in buckets, you know, with those long sticks in them. Because it's a vine, and it grows up. But I've seen that, too, just right in their front yard or mm-hmm. something, you know. You're right. We don't need a whole lot of anything.
And then get with your neighbors and say, okay, I'm going to grow tomatoes. You grow basil. And then, mm-hmm. like, you know, then we start creating this whole ecosystem of food in our neighborhood where we don't have to rely so much on the grocery store, or in my case, the grocery store app on my phone. And so, I don't know where that food comes from.
I don't either. And I'm thinking, are we going to run them out of business or what? Because I heard that's why Kroger's had not really extended their store like they were going to, because things are changing so fast. How we do things.
How we get food. How we, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So fast.
I don't know. That would be so interesting to know if we're actually hurting. I mean, I support local. There's a farmer's market here in the summer that I really would encourage people to go to.
Yes.
And I think that when Center Street opens their market, they are looking to have as much local food as possible.
So where would that take place?
It's at the old cigar shop.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And they're looking at some funding sources. From what I've heard, similar to if you go to the farmer's market, there's such a thing called produce perks. Mm-hmm. So if you spend a dollar on your food stamp card, we'll match a dollar for fruit and vegetable. There's funding that would allow brick and mortar to do that too. So
really?
That could be a wonderful way to get healthy food all year round. And urban farming can happen year round with the right equipment.
Okay.
So if any funders are listening...
Pick your ears.
Yeah. Anything's possible. There's hoop houses and greenhouses. And I know the Autism Support Network is, they're really acquiring a lot of land bank properties right now and building greenhouses and want to plan out a vision for year-round local food in Marion.
Wow. It's all good. I think we all are building an appetite towards healthier foods, cleaner, as clean as we can get our food, you know, because like every time we turn around, something's being called back. And I may have just left a grocery store and I'm thinking now, you know, and how many people have just left a grocery store? Some people go to the store every day.
And maybe don't even realize it's been recalled.
No. No. Yeah. But hey,
and I think when your point about you people want more local, cleaner food, we're definitely seeing that with the younger generation. So in Marion County, there's about 17% of people that don't know where their next meal's coming from. And when we did focus groups and talked to parents and youth, you know, a lot of parents felt like, you have it way better than what I had growing up. You know, they experienced hunger in such a literal way, scrounging for food, empty stomach. And the new generation isn't just saying, we deserve any type of food. We deserve healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's more pressure with the food stamp program and with food pantries to offer that choice. We hope that this spring we'll have funding opportunities to extend to food pantries that say, hey, we will offer maybe food from Mays Temple in our pantry or in other community gardens.
Right.
To prioritize that local fresh food option.
Now, thinking about my own grandchildren, they will go in my refrigerator and say, Grandma, this milk is past the date. That's all they think about is the date. And I mean, I don't want that. That's past the date. It may be on the date. It's still no good, Grandma, because it says this is a day that we can't have it anymore. Now, I try to explain, that's a date. They can't sell it in the store any longer.
Right.
And I think a lot of people are concerned about that when they go to the food pantries and stuff, because a lot of that food is past the date.
There's a lot of opinions on that, and there's a lot of guides that can help you. I mean, I really am a proponent of, if you want to eat it, don't serve it. So making sure there's quality food. I think Marion City Schools does a great job with the produce that they give out. They will sort through and make sure that there's nothing on that item that is rotted or,
right,
you know, but you should watch the cans and other items that have those dates and determine for yourself. Or if you have specific questions, we're always here to answer them too.
I don't think they think about canned food at all.
Yeah.
Not youth of today. It's whatever's in that refrigerator that they're looking at the date, you know, because it's all stamped. And I think canned food lasts longer, past the date anyway, you know.
And you were talking about your relative that was canning. I mean, they probably didn't put a date on there, whether they should have or not.
They did.
Oh, did they? Good.
The date
good.
That they canned it.
The date that they canned it. Yeah. So then you need to make sure to go back and look so that you
know. But that stuff lasted forever. Yeah. For years.
Yeah.
For years.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a perfect example. Maybe we had a canning class to this this thing.
We're going to need that with the garden.
I think that's a good idea because the other thing you're kind of pointing to is like food waste.
Yeah.
Is we need food, but sometimes we don't distribute it enough and then it gets wasted.
It does. Because we don't get it out to the people soon enough. So when they do come, a lot of stuff is outdated and people don't want it.
Yeah.
And they may take it home, but they may throw it away or give it to somebody else. So, but my dad used to say, if you're really hungry, you'll eat anything. Mm-hmm. He used to tell us that. You're not hungry. He was trying to get us to understand that there were people really hungry.
Yep.
And they would be honored to have what you're throwing away or passing up, you know. We don't think about that as kids, you know. Your stomach growls, and I'm ready to eat. You know, I want to eat. What are we eating today? So, and a lot of that with our young people today, and it's just hard to imagine. There's so many people hungry.
Yeah, it really is. And I just think about my own daughter and trying to, like, teach her that not everyone lives the same way that she does.
Right.
I was really fortunate because my parents, they took me to soup kitchens. They took me to food pantries and forced me to volunteer and to understand that the life you have is not what everyone else has.
Wow, that was a great experience. Mm-hmm. No wonder you are who you are today.
Yeah, it really did shape me.
Yes,
so
it did.
So my dad is listening.
Wow, what an experience.
Yeah, I think it's good for young people to just explore differences and understand that we come from different places. And
yes.
It's good not to assume, even as adults, I mean, right? Like, we all need to be remembering these principles.
True. Sounds like something I've been preaching for the past month. Do not assume.
Mm.
Check and find out for yourself. Because a lot of times we do assume. You know, well, they're okay.
Yep.
I don't see them out begging or knocking on any doors asking for anything, but who wants to?
Yeah.
Sometimes that's so degrading to have to even go to a food pantry. You just, some people just have all this pride, but we can't read their minds either.
Yeah, it's hard because that's kind of the narrative of our culture is, you know, pull yourself up. And so when it's difficult, we're afraid to ask for help.
True.
But we should, because that's what community is about.
Right.
It's helping one another. And there's so many great organizations in Marion that are here to help.
That's true. And that's why you're here on the air and you're working so hard. And the people who agree with you are working so hard and letting people know that you don't have to be ashamed. These food pantries and the gardens, community gardens, are there for you, for your benefit.
Mm-hmm.
So who do they need to connect with if they want to be a part of it and want to help?
Well, if you connect with me and I'm connected to Amaze Temple, then we can find resources and support. The Master Urban Farming class is available to anyone.
Okay.
I even welcome teenagers because they give us like a different perspective. And just with technology, there might be ways that we can use it to support production of fruit and vegetables. So anyone is welcome to come, no matter what your experience is with farming. It's really an introductory class. Mm-hmm. There's no cost. We encourage registration just so we can prepare enough materials, but it's free, open to the community March 19th through April 16th. That's every Thursday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and it's at Mays Community Temple. And I'm just really thankful for Pastor Jackson and the congregation there. And I know that Pastor Peterson and Logos is also, you know, they're supporting initiatives to feed the community too.
Oh, yes, absolutely. They also have that free produce market every second Saturday, but they won't start up again until April.
Okay.
Yeah, because this December they were closed in January, February, March, and they opened up again in April. So, but still, you're right. She does. She's a great advocate for whatever our community needs.
And that's why there's an organization called the Black Church Food Security Network, and it's about this idea of churches coming together to do what we can with what we have to make the community a healthier place through providing access to healthy food. So, you know, if one church is distributing produce, another one's producing produce, another one's teaching about farming, I mean, we're all in this together and can reinforce one another.
You know, after you talked about the composting and that it came from Egypt and the blacks brought it over here with them, you know, I wondered about our diet. Because I heard someone say that we eat sweet potatoes as blacks. You know, that was one of our favorite dishes. Or candied yams and things like that. But they ate something similar to that over there. Even the greens. Right. It was similar to their diet over there. And I'm thinking, they must have brought that over here with them.
Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, I think a lot of the things, too, with diet have to do with how kind of the history of like certain policies have been laid out. I mean, redlining existed where insurance companies wouldn't invest in black communities, wouldn't lend to black communities. And if you follow the patterns of redlining, similar lines exist to where grocery stores were put in, where they even exist today. There's a pattern. I wish I could show you a visual of, like, these maps that you can pull up, just to how these historic policies have disinvested and disenfranchised people. So over by where Mays Community Temple is, the nearest grocery store is 2 miles away. So, I mean, when you look at that and then you overlay the where people of color live compared to where white people live and who has access and who doesn't, it all starts aligning. It all starts making sense why it's not just an individual choice to why maybe black Americans are more at risk for heart disease and for diabetes. It's very much a design of the system to cut off access to certain groups.
That's disheartening, isn't it?
It is, and I don't mean to be so negative because that's not what I mean. It's disheartening, I get motivated, though. Like, we need to do something.
Do something like, about mobilize, that.
And that's why the garden is like, we don't have to ask a grocery store to come in. I mean, true. I think there is a convenience store. Norris Market used to be over there, I thought.
Is on Bennett right? Street. There's a market over there.
Okay. I heard the new owners are really interested in providing better access to produce.
And that's good because they're so expensive.
Yeah.
And people, like you say, if the grocery store is 2 miles away from there, now you're talking about, you even think about Fair Park, okay? King Saber, that's quite a ways from Bennett Street. Or even my street. Then you're talking about Kroger's or Walmart or, you know, some of those grocery stores. Yes, they are quite a ways away from us. So we don't have ready access. You got to have a car or take a bus. And, and when you take a bus, you can only carry so much, you know. But it's just to think that, wow. You don't even know what to think about things like that. Why would you do that to disenfranchise people? And then it makes you think, okay, they want to say that crime rate is so high amongst blacks. But why? you know, when you're doing everything you can to help them fail at living mm-hmm. And having decent food or transportation or job or...
I mean, what happens when people experience trauma?
Right.
They act out, you know? And so when we traumatize communities, when people are starving, then it becomes a means of survival. It's our biological instinct to fight or flight.
Yeah, yeah.
Not to excuse any behaviors, but
no,
it's
not
just
to excuse
it. Understand a context.
But it kind of makes a little more sense when you're thinking about it, you know? I can't, and you wonder why they say, well, I can't have this, and I can't do that, I can't go mm-hmm. here, I can't go there, and if I do... I don't have the same results.
Yep. And I always, you know, because the work I do, a lot of people get depressed by it. A lot of people feel hopeless and, well, this sucks.
But there's always hope.
But there's always hope, and I'm so inspired by futurism and writing ourselves into the future.
That's great, isn't
it? You know,
it?
I think about your ancestors mm-hmm. and how braiding... is such a tradition in the Black culture, and it came from Africa, and they used to braid seeds into African women's hair.
Really?
And just that imagery of they were hopeful for the future.
Mm-hmm.
They were planning for the future. They were literally sowing seeds into women's hair, and that's been passed down, and women are still braiding their hair today.
Yes.
It reminds us our ancestors were dreaming for us to be here today, and there's always hope, and we have to continue that hope and that struggle for our descendants.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. And we can't have excuses.
No.
We can't have excuses, because what's good for one is good for another, and all those doors are not still closed. They're opening every day, wider and wider, and just like you say, all these opportunities are coming up. And really, we want to target the youth, mm-hmm. the young people, because they need to know how to do these things. I might know how to do a garden myself from watching my parents.
Right.
But does my children know how? Probably not. You know, or yeah. And don't even talk about my grandchildren, because they're on a new system. Let's order pizza, you know,
yeah.
Let's go out to Dairy Queen, you know, or something like
yeah.
that, you know. And they would be the main ones. Driving up to McDonald's, they've already ordered their food and say, I'm here, and they bring the food out to the car.
Yeah, they've already done it on their phone.
So convenient, you know. So, but I think they really need something to do, and a lot of them might
yeah.
even enjoy that, being a part in helping others
yeah.
to succeed and have strength and health.
Yeah, and to get the youth to, you know, engage and realize this is part of like their own tradition and their
right.
identity. And I really am imagining somehow this summer pairing the youth with elders in the community and interviewing them on how did you garden?
Right.
Where did you get your food from?
Right.
And doing these, you know, Johnny Jackson does Marian Voices. And so they're facilitating these oral histories right now. In general about place and work in Marian, but you know, we've had some informal conversations about discussing the history of agriculture and writing this stuff down so this generation and the next can understand where you've come from and what you were taught and why
right.
they did it the way they did it.
Right. It sounds exciting. I'm going to mention that to my granddaughter, who just got her BA, and see what she thinks about that.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, Ohio State. Yeah,
wow,
she graduated December 2019.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very proud of her.
That's wonderful.
Very
Actually,
proud.
I think I saw your pictures on Facebook.
You
yeah,
may have.
Yeah,
yeah.
So pretty. Yeah,
yeah.
She's so beautiful.
Thank you.
Proud mama.
Yeah, she made it. Yes. And I'd like to know what she thinks about that.
Yeah.
Having a garden. I don't know about the boys. She's my only granddaughter.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder what she thinks about that. But it'd be interesting. I may even ask my grandsons what they think about gardening or being a part of it, you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Maybe there's a way that, like, what are their interests? How do we weave it in?
Mm-hmm. But that's also a way of being their own entrepreneurs.
Yep.
having their own business. You know, yeah. I mean, they really could.
I mean, they could, if youth are interested, they could help us sell the produce from the garden to the farmer's market.
Yes.
I know that that was suggested by Jason Chauber as a means to give some of those proceeds back to the congregation and invest more back into the garden. So
that's true.
That'd be an excellent project.
Yes, it would.
And you know, our office has 4-H, and a lot of people think of the county and they think mm-hmm. of livestock, but there's so much that you could do with 4-H around.
That's good.
Urban farming here in the city of Marion.
All is not lost, Whitney.
Nope, there's hope, everyone.
All is not lost. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
And when you think about the traditions, you're talking about ancient Egypt. Mm-hmm. My gosh, and we're talking about 2020?
I know, right?
Using the same concepts they did?
Yep, we can do it, and I think we honor them by doing it that way. And,
yes. You'd think that had been dead and buried, like with many of them, but no, it's still alive.
Yep, here we are, still doing the same concepts.
Yeah.
We don't have to reinvent anything.
No, something that works.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
Wow.
This is not new technology.
Yes, it's beautiful, though, to think about that.
Yeah, I get really inspired by history and understanding my ancestors and the ancestors of others.
Right.
And that's what gives me hope, is we haven't been the only ones struggling, and they believed in a awesome possible future, so
yes,
we should
did.
Too.
All the way down to 2020.
Yeah.
That's a long stretch.
They would be so happy and impressed with the progress we've made.
Yes.
How we're sitting here having this conversation
today.
Isn't
that something?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. A milestone.
Yeah.
We're talking about a milestone. Thank you for coming and spending time with us today. I have really enjoyed what you had to share with us, and hopefully those of you enjoyed what Whitney has to share about the community garden and all the work that she does in our community. We're fortunate and very blessed to have her. Thank you once again for listening to A Voice of a People with Linda Sims here on WWGH 107.1.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio, the talking place. For 107-year-old viral video sensation Virginia McLaurin on meeting President and Mrs. Barack Obama.
You said now you'd be able to die happy. Why did that mean so much?
Well, you see, I'm 106, and this is my wish. I always wish that would happen. I wish I would have.